we'll decide 17th for now.
We're just at the 17th, okay. So this is the first of a four-part parenting series for tweens and teens. First, I would like to go around and just hear the ages of kids that you have. And if you just want to glance at this sheet is not really, this is an idea sheet. I did not make a specific sheet for tonight because I want to see, I have in mind what I want to say, but I want to make sure that I'm going to be covering your issues. So I would like to hear the ages of the kids that you have, and if you have certain things that are concerning you that you want to make sure you're covering, or just general ideas, so that I make sure that I'm guiding the classes towards the issues that you are facing or that you would like to be facing or, you know, what you want. So so I guess I'll just start with me because not everybody knows me. So I'm Elisa Bulow. I have six kids. My youngest, unfortunately, passed away a year and a half ago. He was 19. He had mental illness, so I have experience raising and losing a child to mental illness. And then my oldest is 28, mother of one, hopefully more soon. Then comes, that's Elisheva Hoffman. She lives on the west side with me, near me. Avi Bulow lives on the east side, married to Gitti. They're both wild and crazy. They have three children, Ezra, Jonah, who has Down syndrome, who's three, and Rachel, who's the youngest but runs the show. And then Sarah, and then I have twins, Sarah and Uri. Sarah lives in Detroit, and she has two children. And Uri is a geneticist working in Boulder, applying for MD-PhD programs. And then Aviva, my current youngest, she's 22. She's graduating Metro and applying for graduate programs in computational biology and is hoping to get into Yale. We'll see. Everybody keep your fingers locked and debited. So that's my parenting experience, six kids in 7.5 years, raising them through teenhood and young adulthood. And it's a pack of kids with lots of varied experiences. So what I want to my hope to share in this class is parenting experiences, but really Jewish parenting thoughts, that it should be Jewish specifically. So some text-based stuff and some ideas that we see within Jewish thought, and then practical stuff where we're trying to head with our kids. Okay.
Hi, my name is Heidi, and I have a 16-year-old daughter, Lisa, who's an 11th grader at Cherry Creek, and Jason is a 7th grader, just turned 13 at Kansas City School. And I don't know. You know, something about the description of the class interested me because I'm trying to kind of back off from, like, worrying about her driving. And, you know, it's a trade-off, and I guess what you wrote here kind of, you know, resonated with me. And I grew up in Pennsylvania, and my parents are now both passed away, so sometimes I really miss having my mother to ask about some of these parenting kind of dilemmas.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
My name's Tracy, and I have a 14-year-old daughter who's also at Cherry Creek, and a 12-year-old son who's at campus. Mm-hmm. And they recently moved from Denver Jewish Day School to the public system. So mm-hmm. it's been interesting just in terms of parenting them and the Judaics involved, how we've dealt with that, mm-hmm. how we continue to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And I also tend to be more of a helicopter parent. As they get older and more independent, I'm dealing with letting go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is everybody, let me just ask, are you both married? Are you?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, just check. Okay.
I wanted to add one more comment. I know this is through the JCC, but I wasn't really aware of the Jewish, how involved, or I guess how much of part the Judaic part was going to be, so that's... I mean, I'm interested, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a little news to me.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a Jewish class,
right.
So I just want to make it Jewish.
Oh.
And it can be as Jewish as you guys want it to be. That's up to you, too. So,
I'm not that observant. I do belong to
It's not going to be observant.
Okay.
It's going to be Jewish. There's a very, while I am observant myself, I teach from a pre-denominational perspective. So that's the Torah that belongs to everyone before we branched out into Orthodox, Conservative, Reformer, Constructionist, Renewal, etc. There's a Torah that belongs to us all. And that's what I try to share. So, okay, you're next.
That was our 12-year-old. Because one of the 15-year-old girl twins, Haley and Jordan.
Are they called you already?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the 12-year-old son, Matthew, called because Haley told him he had to be the one to clean up the entire kitchen.
Because she's in charge.
Sophia has done that. He needed to get his homework done, and he got to watch a show, and he has to be bed by 8:45. He's done his homework. He's been in the kitchen. But now he can't be done with his show by 8:45.
There's a lot of anxiety.
Right. Yeah.
Mom's going to be so upset when
he comes
home.
Nice that he called for that.
Because it's a new home, too, maybe?
No.
1 week old home?
No. But no, that's not why.
That's not why. That's not his. That would not be.
We're neighbors and now they move.
Yes, our, our three, we have three, you know, 2 15-year-olds and a 12-year-old. And great, great, fun, interesting kids. I feel like every day has its own set of challenges. Everyone has their challenges, but probably every parent feels like we're like, why is this so hard for us? And every day I feel like I'm doing something that I don't know, or like I feel like I'm doing something wrong. And you know, I feel like we're having conversations all the time about why are we doing it this way? And you know, it's
not my one.
It's tough.
It really is.
Challenging. And so then you feel like you need to rise to that challenge. They didn't ask to be challenging. And I don't know if we always feel like we're rising.
Okay. Okay. Good. That's good.
And we have three kids, and David is 26, and he's actually roommate with Yael, that is 20, almost 5, and one more friend of Yael from college, so the three of them in Manhattan right now. And Yoni is still home for 1 year. He's 17 and a half, he's a senior. Mm-hmm. And also helicopter parent. I repeated myself in the class called the, what's the name of that? Something with love.
I love logic.
I'm repeating it, not because they made me. I needed to repeat it.
You got held back.
Spanish, like to phrase instead. But just thinking today, the 26-year-old doesn't want to cut his hair ever. Better than tattooing or something else. And my mom from Chile calls me, it's terrible, it looks horrible. And I'm thinking, he's 26. And I asked the 17-year-old, can I, like what can I do? He said, Mom, let him be. It's his choice. And it's
hard.
And it's changeable. It's not like it's forever. And he cannot say anything because he had an afro when he was young.
It was but, longer.
And now that it's working, I really feel he should, but I cannot force him. Doesn't find a good hairdresser there, and the one in Denver moved.
There are always good excuses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Yoni just broke his fifth bone, falling down the stairs. So he asked the doctor, he wants to be nice, can I drive? No, you asked, unfortunately. And he said, well, if you feel comfortable, what's crazy to drive with a car? So now I'm the bad mommy because it's already 2 weeks and I don't let him. I don't know if I'll win for 4 more. And I asked him today, doctor, if he stopped, he'd be guilty. I mean, there's no way, because if everything's smooth, he'd make it to school. But if there's a problem, and you have to be quick, it's a big cost. So I say, yeah, you're right, it's not so safe. It's like, why? You want to be on the good side of Yoni, so you'll be nice and making me problems. And Peter is softer, and he wants to say, well, let's try around the block. Well, around the block, everything will be okay. So also, like, how much can you worry and be a Jewish mom and versus, you know,
I was gonna say that's easy. Yeah. A lot, yeah.
And giving up on hygiene, like he goes on a sleepover, I said, you can brush your teeth, right? And what about the asthma? And it's like,
it is.
It's
in
college,
so I think the only thing I would add to all of that is simply that each kid is unique, and so it's always something to learn. Even though we've been through it and this is our third, and in theory we're almost done, but
right,
you're not really done.
Right.
No.
Sure,
never, right?
Right. For sure not.
You do it.
This is Megan and Steve Shoffler. We have 4 children. Our oldest is 14, and our next is a daughter, and she is 11. We're both at West Middle School, and then we had twins who turned 9 next week, and we just moved them to Greenwood Elementary. They all went to Denver Jewish Day School, and then the older is transitioned, the twins we moved out. So, it's 4 of them in 5 years, and that keeps life pretty busy. And we have 4 nieces and nephews who are exactly the same age, including a set of twins that are 9 years old. They're 18 years old. So there's lots and lots of kids in our lives in and out. And I think from at least my perspective, I don't speak for Megan, there's a whole series of things. I remember when I was young, I looked at my parents and said, how did they not know? And I think we want to be those parents that are not the ones that don't know.
Right.
And there's a whole series of things that are out there that we didn't experience, like tweeting and texting and the amount of time they spend on their computers, which drives me crazy, and on the phones and the cars, and plenty to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just crossing into that. We're just beginning to experience that teenage attitude.
Yeah.
And I don't love it, but I know that we got to get used to it.
Yeah. They're all girls? Did you say they're all four girls?
Oh, this is a boy and uh-huh. three girls. Uh-huh.
Dana Licht, and yes, I'm married. He's just not here. Mm-hmm. Chauffeuring. Mm-hmm. We have 15-year-old daughter Ashley, 14-year-old son Joey, and 11-year-old, she just turned 11 last week, daughter Amanda. Mm-hmm. And I was telling Steve, I said, if we had all Ashleys, we'd be like, what is wrong with us? And if we had all Joey and Amanda's, we'd wonder what's wrong with every other parent out there. Don't they know how to parent? Because so she's just... She's wonderful and energetic, but she's always the one that drives me to our parenting classes. Mm-hmm. I constantly go.
That's the oldest job, I think. Oh,
yeah.
What I mean, happens with the oldest.
Yeah, so just helping for her to find out who she is and making good choices. And you will know, because I've found out everything, and I know everything, and she just doesn't like to be spied on. But I said, my job is to keep you safe. So walking that fine line between... knowing, and she's not doing anything bad. I mean, she's a good student, and she's not a drug addict. She's not having sex, and she, you know, but she's dabbled and tried things here and there, and she needs to know, I know, and this is what happens, and so...
How do you know from Facebook?
Well...
But before you say, let's just say, I know some parents who, because I think it's better to do it that and then necessarily say, I'm doing, because we do want to protect, our children are all going to grow up. They might marry each other, you know, or they might marry neighbors. And it's really, you don't necessarily want to be sharing stuff about your kids that other people don't need to know or later on. And yet we want to create a space where we can ask questions that we want to ask. So I think it's better, even if people figure out, but they don't know it for sure, to say, some parents I know do this, some parents I know do that. There are kids who do this, there are kids who do that. I have a kid who, everybody has more than one. So you can just say, I have a kid who. It doesn't have to be, Ashley drives me nuts because, right? It doesn't have to be, it could just be one of my kids. This and simple, you can just mix them together in personality.
We all know each other's kids. Yeah. We'll know.
You might, but it's better to try to make it vague if you can.
Right.
If you have to, or if there's a very private question, so ask it later. We can talk. This is not the only forum, but you can ask more general, but just be respectful that your children are growing and they're not going to want everything to be shared, and they will become adults really soon. And then all the impressions that are made in this class get stuck because you won't see each other as kids growing necessarily. So you just hear that this one's a thief and that one's, you know, smokes pot and that one is doing bad in school. And you see him 5 years later and you're like, I'm not hiring him. I'm not writing a letter of recommendation for him. He's a druggie. You're like, no, he's not. He's great. So it's important to just be thoughtful and mindful about and spouses, too. You could say, some people in my family say we should do it this way. You know, you don't have to say my mother-in-law or my husband or my sister. You know, it could be, you know, there's conflict in my family. Some people really feel strongly about this, and some people feel... So you don't have to say it. I'm just saying these are ways to say it that make it more general and more respectful and not putting other people on the spot necessarily. So just be respectful of your marriages, too. So that everybody feels like you're growing together instead of, you know, we don't want to have any blaming. Even if there is that privately in the car, okay, but it doesn't have to be here. So, okay, go ahead.
So it's just, yeah. I guess what speaks to me is helping children feel good about themselves, making good choices without being like the helicopter parent, and just growing up happy and having gratitude.
Mm-hmm, gratitude. Okay, I'm going to write that. Mm-hmm. Gratitude and happy and technology. Now, I have to admit, I am so thankful I finished my younger parenting before this crazy wave of technology. I mean, I had my youngest in it. I'll tell you, I mean, as an Asperger's bipolar child, but this is a great story that he had. So, you know, as Asperger's kids have perseverating qualities, and they... Focus. And his focus was computers. He loved computers. Love. I limited screen time. He was my youngest, up in the middle of the night, you know, and I locked the door to where the computer is, and he picked the lock, and I put on the brass things that you can't slide credit cards through or undo the screws, and he's working hard to, like, pry them open and get to the internet and whatever it is. Anyway, finally I told him, like, you know, if I see you up in the middle of the night again, I'm going to have to take it out. I'm going to turn off the whole internet from the whole house for a week. He's up in the middle of the night again, have to turn it off, and he's telling me he just can't. It's not okay. That's how I manage my depression, Ima. I said, I understand that, but you're going to have to learn other managing techniques. He says, you don't understand. It's the air that I breathe. I said, I understand that, but I told you the consequences, and you're just going to have to figure out how to breathe in a different way for a week. He says, Ima, you don't understand. You can't take it away from me. I said, actually, I can take it away from you, and that's what I'm doing because I laid out the clear consequences for your choices. You made the choice. I take it away. That's how it works. He says, Ima, you don't understand. Taking away the internet from me is like you dying and finding out that Jesus is right. Right. Now, ask me what happened after that. I don't remember. But it was very clear that, like, this is not an option. You're not getting it. Meanwhile, however, others who were raised without that much screen time. So I'm not fully equipped, and I'm so thankful that that wasn't one of my challenges. But I will say this about that. That we are absolutely, everybody knows, we're in a totally different age that we cannot measure according to our childhoods. And as educators, I don't know if anybody's an educator, but we never, ever will be able to have best practices in education again, in my opinion. Because changing so fast, the generations are flipping, I'd say probably every 5 years, we can call it a new generation, a new paradigms of learning. The way that brains work, the way that social interactions work, we're all now the people from the old country, and our children are the Americans, and we're all speaking Yiddish as if we came from... Our kids, like, they look at us like we're from the Stone Age, you know? I mean, I tried having a handwritten address book so that I wouldn't have to go onto the computer and get lost every time I look for an address. And my son is like, what, are you going to contact the Flintstones with that? You might as well use a chisel. I mean, like, so yeah. So it is a whole different, as educators, a whole different paradigm because they store information. I mean, now this is your primary screen. Advertisers talk about primary screens and secondary screens. So a primary screen hopefully is the TV, right, for them in the advertising lingo. And the secondary screen is what you avert your eyes to when the commercial comes on, right? So that's your phone. Although now people are watching with tertiary screens, so they also have their iPad, their phone, and the screen in front of them. So the advertising conundrum is how do you keep the eyes on the primary screen or how do you keep them engaged with advertising and keep their eyes off their secondary screen? But we need to know as parents and as educators that this is the primary screen for our kids. This is not the secondary screen. This primary interface with the world, that's a secondary screen. So that means teachers and parents, also secondary input, and this is primary. It's not something we can fully wrap our brains around as much as we might use technology and have embraced whatever, and certainly as parents with teens, we're at an advantage that we know how to use these things. I'm petrified for as my kids get a little older and I'll lose my touch, but as parents with teens, you at least have somebody who can help you navigate how to use all those devices and stay current, but we still don't know what's really going on inside their brains and how they store information, how they form opinions, how they make friendships, how they talk to each other, and what the world is like inside a brain that works that way. It's not something that we have access to. So we just have to know that it is a different world, and all we can do is our best, which might not be good enough. And that's all every generation's been able to do. So we can relax a little bit in that, you know, if I want to bring God into it at all, just God put us here, our kids are here, our generation is here, our technology is here. All we can do is what we can do. That's all we're asked to do, is what we can do with the resources that we have, with the information that we have, with the temperament that we have, with the temperament that they have, with the resources that they have, with the siblings that they have. There's that interaction, and all we can do is our best. What is our best, right? What is our best? So that's a real question. And I have to say that, Jewishly, that's one of the things I love the most. The very first mitzvah when we came out of Egypt, the first mitzvah we got as a nation was to renew yourself. The mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, but it's really a mitzvah of this newness shall be to you. The first of all newness is reinvent yourself. You are not stuck. no matter how you were raised, no matter what country you were raised in, no matter what your economic background, no matter what your temperament, no matter what country you've been in, no matter what the government is like, you can make a choice about who you want to be and how you want to be. And no matter how old you are, you can make a choice each and every day. So can our kids, it turns out. So, right, that's one of my favorite quotes from the Boston Rebbe, is that the greatest gift God gave to mankind is free will. And unfortunately, he gave it to our kids as well. So that's a super hard thing. So I just want to start with a couple of concepts. So first of all, we're raising adults, not raising children. Right? What we want, they're children now, but what we're raising is adults. So one of the things that helped me, certainly when my kids were younger, was just pretending that I was a babysitter. Babysitters, first of all, can have more patience. Less wisdom, more patience, right? So working on the patience thing. But who was I babysitting for, who wasn't going to pay me, but the adult that was going to come and take that child away is the adult that's inside that child. Because there is an adult there. And that's who you're babysitting for, is that 25-year-old, 30-year-old, who will come and say, thank you for taking care of me all these years. I will now leave and know everything that you did. All of it. Unlike babysitter-parent relationships, right? So
that again.
Unlike the babysitter, when the parent comes to take the child back from the babysitter, the parent doesn't know everything you did with that kid. But the adult inside the child knows everything you did. Right? Now, that adult inside the child will go through many phases, as you have as adults. Right, so as young adults, certainly as very young adults, that in-between stage as 16, 17, 18-year-old budding adults, you're so mad at your parents, they don't let you drive, you know, or whatever it is, they don't let you spend, they don't let you travel, they don't let you do the things that you feel like you should be able to do. But at 25, you have a different perspective, and certainly at 45, you have a different perspective on that very same thing that your parent did to you, for you, at 16, 17, 18. So you reevaluate as you grow, and your kids will reevaluate. They'll reevaluate for the good and for the bad. They'll cut you a lot more slack, and they'll take you much stronger to task. So just think about you vis-a-vis your parents, right? And the things that you totally understand now, why you couldn't have a lollipop and why you had to brush your teeth, and you can't believe that they didn't understand that you had asthma and needed to go to the doctor and be treated for that. Like, what were they thinking? Why did it take so long? Right? So whatever it is, and you didn't even think about that twice as a 14-year-old who couldn't run track. Because you just couldn't breathe. It didn't occur to you until you had a kid with asthma and you realized, hey, there's medicine for this. Why did I have to suffer for so long? Whatever it is, you understand your parents differently, both sides, as you grow. And so your kids will too. So first is that we're raising adults, and we want to have that in mind, the kind of adult that we want to raise. And second is that we're raising human adults. So here's my own paradigm that I like to just think about, the difference between lobsters and humans, right? So a principal difference, besides they're both not kosher. I was actually recently at a bris, at a circumcision, and an 11-year-old boy got a hold of the tip. And he was overjoyed. He's running around with it folded in a little tissue, a little bit of blood on the edge of the tissue, a little bit of that blood gone in his pocket. He's showing all his friends, look, I got blood in my pocket. He's running around. Then, okay, finally I realize what he's got, like why he's so thrilled, right, that he's got this little bit. And then I overhear a conversation, the three of them standing around, no, you can't put it in a chillant. It's not kosher. I know. Boys are boys are boys, right? Just like they're such boys. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It just reminded me of I had a time when my son, we were in the country, and he was riding his bike. It didn't have the handlebar things, just had the handlebars, you know, with no pad things on. He runs up, he throws his bike down, runs into the bungalow, runs back, and he says, what? I forgot. I have a frog. Picks up his bike. Now his bike now has a plug of dirt in the handlebar because he threw it down, right? So he's digging out. He says, I put the frog in my handlebar. So he's digging out the dirt to access the frog. As he digs out the dirt, he's pawing it out, and then he hits the frog. He's like, oh. He, like, dug too hard. So he pulls out the dead frog, and he wipes it on the tree. And then he runs in to do the rest of his thing. I'm like, oh, you're such a such a boy. Like, it's not something I can understand at all. That's the same kind of boy that, you know, finds the tip. So.
Right. Lobster. I got some.
Right. Okay. So lobsters and humans, both not kosher. That was the point of that story. Lobsters, how they differ from humans is they have an exoskeleton. Their hard stuff is on the outside, and their soft, vulnerable stuff is on the inside. It's the exact opposite of human beings, where our hard stuff is on the inside, and our soft, vulnerable stuff is on the outside. Right? So first, we parent like lobsters. All the structure has to come from the outside. So for toddlers, for babies, for toddlers, for early elementary, you have to parent with all the structure on the outside. But you're raising humans, not lobsters. So starting around 8 is when you have to start flipping it to a human paradigm where the structure comes from the inside, which means that there will be vulnerable, soft, damageable stuff on the outside. That's where it is. That's where we humans have it. But all the structure has to be on the inside because you're not going to be there. And no matter how up you are on everything she's doing, she'll figure out a way. Or she could figure out a way. A child can figure out a way. They know how to sneak out of the house. They know how to steal a car. They know your car, right? They know how to drive it, and they know how to do whatever they want to do. They know how to find money, and they know how to buy what they want to buy, and they know how to have the experiences, and they know how to lie about it. Whatever they want. They can climb out a window in the middle of the night while you're sleeping. You know, whatever they're doing, they can do it, right? So if they don't have the structure inside, then they'll do whatever they want. You have to help them build a structure of what will keep them strong, what will keep them straight, what will help protect what's vulnerable. It can't be all from the outside.
So I want to say something about that because mm-hmm. I know probably all three of them will mm-hmm. do something, and I don't have a problem with it. And there's not like this punishment and all this because I know I was a kid once. I know they're kids. They're going to do whatever and figure things out. What it is like when you're
stave it off.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you
stave it off, but also okay, like making good choices once like, okay, whoa, I did that, like, and thinking through it. And
right,
just don't think, you know?
Right. So for sure. So what
I'm not expecting them to not do
stuff. Of course they're gonna do stuff. So the trick is to create a relationship with you that's warm enough that they'll talk to you about it. You know, warm enough where they'll say, I slept with Bobby last night and I didn't like it. Is that what sex is always like? Where you can sit down with them and say, no, it's not. That was your first time. It hurts a lot the first time. Let's talk about what it's like more. And maybe it's different in a relationship where you really care about a person rather than just trying it out. You know, but you want her to be able to come to you and say that. Or you want him to be able to come to you and say, I'm really thinking about pot, except for I want to qualify for a good grad school. You know, what will it do to my brain? What will it do to my grades? What will it do to my chances? You know, can I talk to you about it? And you have to be available for that. You know, so you want to create a relationship of such trust that they could talk to you about it. Or that they know they can call you. One of the things we told our kids as they got a little bit older is you can call us any time of the day or night. We will drive you home, no matter where you are. No questions asked, no punishments. Period. End of discussion. You don't want to get into a car, you're drunk, or a friend is drunk, you call us, we will come. No questions asked. Period. So they would know that they never, ever have to get into
on that.
Yeah, only one. Once,
I was
and they were
that too, but I never took him on my what,
so it was only one once, and he was actually older. Yeah. Yeah.
And did you follow through on
that? Yeah, yeah.
No questions about,
yeah.
Was that really a good decision to put
yourself
in
he was old enough that he didn't have, I mean, look, we did have a kid who got married very young. So he was married, but he was still very young. He was 23 when he called. And it was planned. I mean, he didn't plan to not, but he didn't plan enough to. He planned to go to a whiskey tasting, but he didn't plan how he was going to get home. So that was fine. So we were like, you know, that is fine. And it was good for all the other kids to see. We went. See? We will go no matter what. No questions asked. You can call us anytime. So it's good just to like reinforce that because we had younger ones under him. So, yeah, but it's an important offer to make and that they can then trust you. You know, that there's not going to be a punishment for that. But, so I definitely want to be talking about how we'll do that flip into the human parenting paradigm, how we make it so that there's that inner structure. and then really the Jewish parenting idea is a concept I learned from Rabbi Rieti of camels. Mm-hmm. Camels. Gamal, right? We say gamal in Hebrew. So in Hebrew we have this concept of roots and branches. or hubs and spokes in words. So gamal, gimel, mem, lamed is how you say camel. That's also the root, the same root as gemilut chasidim, acts of loving kindness. It's also the same root as lihigamel, which is to wean. So if it's all the same root, we have to figure out how does weaning and camels and acts of loving kindness all go together. So it actually all goes together in parenting. So you give and you give and you give and you give, acts of loving kindness, giving and giving and giving, until they're full like a camel. And they can be independent, right? And they can go off into the desert without you. Without your gift, you've weaned them. The idea of giving is the weaning, right? Bringing them to a place of independence where you've given them enough that they are independent. Very hard for Jewish parents to hear that there is a letting go. They are their own people, and we have to release, right? So,
are you weaning them or they're weaning you?
No, we're weaning them from us, right? It's actually harder today because we have this new word. Have you ever heard of emerging adults? Is everybody familiar with that term? So this is the new term. What defines adulthood? You know? What would you say? How do you know somebody's a grown-up?
Independent.
Independent. What kind of independent?
Financial
independence, right? That's a big one. Emotionally, we're always interdependent emotionally, hopefully, but financially independent, right? They completely support themselves. Finished with schooling, often, would be tied into the financial independence.
Can live alone.
Living independently, right? So, and often in a relationship, married or in a semi-permanent or headed towards permanent relationship. Those are all definitions of adulthood, right? So when is that achieved these days? When do you expect
much later.
That 30. To be achieved? 30, that's right. 30. When was it achieved 50 years ago?
1920,
something like that, right? Yeah. So last century's new word was teenager. Because the century before that, in the 1800s, they didn't have that. Right? At 10, you learned a trade, right? Or at 13, you were apprenticed. Or you started or work or marriage at 14, 15, 16, right? So you went from kid to adult. Very quick transition, right? And we have bar and bat mitzvah. None of us think of our kids as adults at bar and bat mitzvah. Even God doesn't, it turns out, because you do have a grace period, don't tell your kids, until age 20. Where you're not fully punishable until 20 for transgressions. You're punishable between man and man before 20, from 13 and 12, but between man and God, it's till 20. So you have that grace period there, because God knows, you're still a kid. So we had teenage in the last century, which was an extended period of not being needed, right? We had in the last century the ability to hang out, happy days, right? Where you could hang out and drink a soda and fix a car for fun, not for money, right? And have extra fun in your life, an extended period of that. So that's teenagehood. But still, they were able to achieve some level of independence by 18, 19, 20, right? Today, the independence is really extended. So it's no longer teenage, it's emerging adults. And that's from 16-ish till 30-ish is emerging adults. Depending on, so it could be a younger, it could be older, but like, you know, that's the framework approximately of growing into adulthood. When are you exhibiting the signs of independence and living independently and caring for yourself and being financially independent and finishing your education towards independence? And that is much, much later today. So that's why we have this thing called emerging adults. And we have kids that are definitely financially interdependent or dependent on their parents. Even we have, you know, healthcare till 26, right? So then we have different, how do we deal with that at 26? Do you tell your kid to get a haircut or not? You know, how does that work? You know, how does that work for you, right? So these are all questions that we have as our kids are more dependent on us and we think that there's strings attached. You know, does anybody have married kids yet? None of you guys do, Yuri. So that's what they say when you marry off a kid, you open a new chapter in your life, chapter 11.
Right.
Chapter 11 is bankruptcy because you're trying to help them get set up in life, right? So that is actually a Jewish joke because as Jews, we do want to have our kids culturally, not that others don't, but culturally, we're very much into setting our kids up. So there's a lot of helicopter parenting, a lot of involved, a lot
of... Everyone buys an apartment and things.
Right, I'm saying it's a very cultural thing to do. It's not necessarily there in every culture that you set your kids up. There's other cultures where they say, you're getting married, great. Do it when you can afford it. You know, you need a food processor, fine. If you can't afford it, save up or swipe your credit card. but not, I mean, culturally, we give a lot more. We want to see them set up. Why should you have old linens? Why should you have fresh linens? Why should you have a, you know, just a dull knife? Have good knives. Why should you have, like, you know, we do that. So that it costs to marry off kids. if you do that, you know, that's your, if that's your thing. So, okay. So we want to be able to give to make them independent, not to make them dependent. That's the trick. And it's a very hard thing, especially with an oldest. The oldest is your paradigm shifter. That's the one that made you into a parent. It's interesting because oldests have different roles in families. Some oldests are the mini parent, and they're really helpful. They run the show. They sometimes even run your show. You know, they're telling you when you need to be back and whatever it is. And I had an oldest who's at 17. My oldest is extremely well behaved, very good mannered. She's the one that God tricked me with, and then I had a bunch of other ones there, not like her at all. but her chutzpahic moment in high school was when she came in to the house at 17 and she said, Ima, can I borrow the car now or in an hour?
Oh,
I'm like, that's good. You learned. It's good. No, that's not how it works. right? May I borrow the car? Might it be convenient for you? Would that be okay? Not giving me choices.
Yeah, we
learned
that.
right? so, good for kids, not so good for adults, right?
That was huge what you said. The trick is to make them independent. To give, but to make them independent and not dependent.
Right, so the giving is, so right, so that's so the goal of the giving is independence, is letting go. It's so hard. So hard.
Because when you give, right. I feel like you're like,
more dependent.
Not demanding of them.
Right.
And so it doesn't require them to face the consequences.
They do have to face the consequences. So what is giving? So hopefully we'll talk about this even more. But what is giving? Giving doesn't mean saying, here's a brand new car. Here, I'll pay for the insurance. Giving is helping them become independent. So, oh, you want a car. How can I help you afford that? Oh, you have a job? It's not going to earn enough? Let's look and see what kind of cars you will be able to afford in a year. Would you like a loan? I could maybe front you some of it after you earn half of it. That's giving to them. You're giving to them financial awareness, right? And the ability to plan, the ability to delay gratification, right? When they want to go to whatever with their friends, a concert, that's an $80 ticket. Is that really how you want to spend your money, or would you rather save it towards your car? Because, you know, we talked about it, as soon as you get to the 750 mark, that's when you can ask for a loan, right? So, and that's when you'll be able to afford the car that you want and start paying us back. So it's up to you, you know, $80 for the ticket, $80 in the car account. That's giving.
Yeah. Wow, they don't see it.
but it is. And that's why it's very important to take some time and think about what are your goals. You're raising an adult. You're not making the life of a child comfortable, right? You want to raise an adult. So you do want to give to them, and you want to be realistic. Okay, everybody has a car, fine. Let everybody have a car. Everybody has a newer car, fine. But in our family, we earn what we have. That's how we got our cars, right? And that's how you can have one too. And we also used a loan, right? So you want a newer car? Fine, let's figure out a way for you to earn that money, you know, whatever it is.
What if the child, because of lack of maturity and, you know, or whatever else, is okay, fine, then I guess I just won't have a car.
Right.
Because I feel like we have, you know, somebody who's like, okay, if it's hard, never mind, and I'll be fine not having. And there are things that we want to set this child, like, of learning, of you need to work hard because if you don't and your grades aren't good, or that there's going to be things in life that you're going to wish that you had saved to get the car.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, 3 years from now when you want a job and all your friends are driving to jobs, you're not going to have a car to get you to your job.
Right.
And if they say now, okay, I don't care, I don't really need a car, we want to be me more than him in the decision. No, you need to save and get this. And so we're going to... either provide the motivation or the punishment or whatever to somehow, even though I know, we know, but for me, it's not going to work, to somehow like internalize for them, oh yeah, that's really, I do need to be saving and getting a match loan and...
Mm-hmm. So it's vital to keep your goals in mind, right? So goals and means. We have to constantly think about goals and means and not mix them up, right? So a lot of times people mix up goals and means. So if the goal is independent child, the goal isn't car. Mm-hmm. Car is a means towards independence, right? Mm-hmm. The goal isn't car. Loan, the goal isn't even loan. Loan is a means towards independence. Mm-hmm. So it could be that earning the money towards a car is a step towards independence, in which case the car then becomes a sub-goal of major goal. But you want to make sure you're keeping your goals in mind. And sometimes it pays as parents to sit down and write out some goals or write out the goals of your parenting. Really take that time and write a sentence or two or a mission statement if you want. Something you could either have on the fridge or have inside your closet door if you don't want your kids to be seeing it. But something that you remember. My goal is raising. I found mantras are helpful for me, but you'll figure out your own mantras. But you want to have goals that just help remind you, oh yes, this will take me towards the goal, this takes me away from the goal. And then you can have a conversation. After you've decided as a couple, what's your goal here with this child? This child's lazy, right? Is it this child really lazy? Let's do a little bit more research. Let's think of it. This child's sneaky. This child's clever. And we feel that that cleverness is not to their advantage. Or maybe it is. How can we help that child learn to be clever to their advantage and not to cut shortcuts? Where they're not going to be able to accomplish what we hope they will be able to accomplish later on, it's not going to be through explaining it to them, right? So how will we, if that's our goal, right, our sub-goal towards independence is helping them, so how are we going to arrange that? Is it going to be through rewards, through punishments, through guidance, through whatever it is, through extra pushing? You're just going to have to figure out how will you accomplish that, but set that as a goal. And that way the two of you can check in together. Is this achieving that goal? Isn't this achieving that goal? What about that overnight? What about that summer camp experience? What about that trip to Israel? What about that? What about helping her with this book report right now? Is that leading it towards it or away from it? You know, what about the parent-teacher conference? You know, I saw a great comic that had parent-teacher conferences then and now, right? So it's a kid with an F on the paper, right? So then the parents are looking at the child saying, what is the meaning of this grade? Now the parents are looking at the teacher saying, what is the meaning of this grade, right? So how will we interact with our children's teachers and with expectations that they have? How will we help them with the science fair project? Are we going to do half the work for them? Are we going to catch them up when they didn't do it? Or are we going to say, gosh, honey, I'm really sorry you didn't take care of it. That's so hard to have to go to school with a half-finished project the day that it's due. You know, and then support them in that. I'm really sorry. You know, I guess maybe you could try negotiating with your teacher to take it incomplete, and maybe you could finish it later. Or, you know, and then so now you know your kid's not so good with the executive function. They're not good at planning projects, or they take on too much. Now help them with a calendar. Actually, get a, I don't know how you do it electronically. Get a paper calendar. Map out a month so they can see it. Project due here. Rough draft would be best here. Polishing would be here, which means that research has to be done here, you know, and help them see that. But you can help them with that in retrospect, too. Like, what went wrong? Let's talk about this. Why didn't you get it finished on time? It took calm, though. Calm. So that's one of my mantras that I'll just give you for the evening so you have that to work on, is educate, don't berate. And I said it to myself a lot. Educate, don't berate. And that was just for me to keep my words in check, right? Educate, don't berate. My goal is to educate, not to berate, right? So I don't have to say, how many times did I tell you, you better do your homework and you better work on that science fair project because now it's not done and I can't believe it. Here, you're going to school and you're going to look like an idiot. All your friends are going to have great projects. Their parents offered to help. I offered to help you. You didn't take me up. And now you're going to school with an incomplete. And look, I can't believe you did this, right? That's berating, right? Or you could just say, wow, right? Or you can educate. When you don't plan your time well, it's hard to get things done on time. If you'd like, after school, I'd be willing to sit down with you and review the calendar and see how we could have done it better. Or see how you could have done it better.
But they don't care.
You have to let them fail. Have to let them fail. Because if they don't fail now, they'll fail later. And it's much better for them to fail now than it is to fail at 26 when they get kicked out of a job again. Because they just didn't show up on time. Much better.
The calendar thing works because I have one child who is always talking about what they want and when they want it, like, and not doing anything. So finally I'm like, you know what? I'm willing to help you if you'd like. I'll sit down with the calendar. I went on to Outlook, and I just printed out a blank calendar for October and a blank calendar for November. And I said, you want to be here by November 13th, it was. What do you need to do? And I wrote in each day and helped. And it's not me nagging anymore.
Excellent.
They're coming to me now and saying, okay, will you do this? So,
excellent. Like, and that's what you want to do is you want to flip it. You want to become their helper. So that they're asking you for help, not you asking them to get it done.
Yeah, I don't say anything because that calendar is like right there.
That's right.
If they want to do it, they can do it.
100%. 100%.
It's off, you know.
Yeah, and you've got to let them bear consequences. It's vital. If they don't bear consequences, then they won't feel it. They have to. They can only learn themselves. We can't give it to them. There is no pill for experience. No amount of money can buy it.
I think there's probably a very delicate line between educating and pushing.
Yes.
I mean,
absolutely.
I know of a good friend who he just knew getting bad grades was just not acceptable, period. And I don't care whether you want to call it fear or whatever, but guess what?
Right.
He didn't get bad grades.
Yeah, but that was your friend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
it does not.
They have to ring.
Of course it does. It's a very thin line.
Right, so what I'm saying, that was your friend, not your kid's friend. It really is a different world. I mean, I do think we need to have good expectations, and I think expectations make a huge difference. You know, and there's really, I think that one of the things that's a gap in the education gap, besides being white and privileged like we all are, is a dream difference. You know, that when I brought my daughter home from the hospital, my first baby home from the hospital, to my in-law's apartment in Manhattan, there was a sign on the door that my father-in-law made that said, "Welcome home. Future college graduate." She was 2 days old. It was very clear. Like, there is no option for you. You will be successful. We'll help you, but you will be, right? That's what we expect, right? So there's a dream that we have, and we talk about our kids. And if our kids ever say, when we say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they say, garbage man. We say, how about if you manage a garbage company, right? Right? Yeah. Like, we just can shift it. We help them build dreams. Like, nobody's thinking that they want to take suitcases off the conveyor belt at DIA. That's not, one of our kids would say that's their dream. We'll help them dream past that. So there is a dream deficit, and we do want to build dreams and expectations, but we're not in an era of straight up, you know, put your foot down in general. It just doesn't work so well today. So I'm not saying we shouldn't. We should, but we do have to decide between what's really pushy and what pushes a kid out. Because you can squeeze tight, and they, like a watermelon seed, they can just pop right out of your fingers, and they're gone. So you want to be careful with that, too.
Yeah, and it's a culture thing because I know an Indian man that told the kids, unless you bring an A home, I'm not paying for college. And they all brought A's home. And
where was that today? Where did you say?
It's an Indian
An Indian family. Indian family, an Asian family.
I'm sorry, yeah.
So, or you bring A's home or I'm not paying for college. And they all brought A's home and they both today, one is a doctor and one is financial, very high up. But
different families. I mean, Asian families today. So rather than saying, if you don't bring an A home, I'm not paying, they'll say, we will live in this apartment when we could afford a house because we will pay for tutors instead. And you will do well. And your pride is our pride. And, you know, you'll be totally embarrassed to get anything below an A because we're living in a hovel for you. And they don't let you forget it. So there's just different ways of doing it, you know. So.
But my daughter has a friend at school who is getting B's, and the family has said, until you get A's, you may not go out on the weekends.
Oh my God.
And she said to me, Mom, can you speak to the parents? She said she wanted to meet me too. I said, I really don't know them, and I don't know the culture. But, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, so it's rare, actually, to do those kinds of things today. Rare for what we might have heard. You know, somebody brings home a 95 for a parent today to say, and knew what happened to the other 5 points. You know, that was the answer of, like, last generation. It's not so much this generation. And today it's hooray, hooray, no matter what you do, really. It's a huge problem. It's a huge problem. That's why we really do have to set expectations and requirements and allow children to fail. You can allow them to cook, you know, and don't fix it.
Tell them about the salad.
Which salad?
All your kids had to make salads and one put too much salt.
Right, so I let them cook, but I would always say who made it at the table. So I would say, Sarah made the salad, and Uri made the cholent, and Elisheva made the kugel, whatever it is, but I would not fix it. So if it was too salty, everybody would, they'd see it's on the plate afterwards when we clear the table. So I'd say, look, you see the kugel, like, it's on everybody's plate because it didn't taste that good. Right? So let's talk about how we can make it better. Or if they would ask, we can make it better. But let them feel it. This is what you do when you look at a recipe. This is what you do when you don't. This is what you do when you ask for help. This is what it looks like when you don't. You know, or whatever it is. This is how, when you have a feel for it, when you don't. But you have to let them have some consequences. So even if it's just the flavor of the food, it's fine. Let them make dinner.
Failure, yeah.
Yeah, it's so important. So important.
Well, they're so busy, they say we don't have time. I mean, for dishes, yeah. But like to make a meal, I mean...
It doesn't have to be just that. I'm saying there's many, many different ways to do it.
Right.
Many
different ways. What you did, it just,
yeah, many different ways. So, it could be clothes shopping, you know. Say, I mean, depending on the age of the child. Say, okay, there's a budget for clothes. You want that coat? Okay, that coat's $250, but there's other ones available for $100. I'm going to give you $500 for clothes right now. Out of that, you're going to need to buy a coat, 3 pairs of pants, 4 shirts, and shoes. Right? Spend it however you want. You know, you want the $150 shoes and the $50 coat? Fine. You budget it. But this is what you have to figure out in the $500 and let them go to the mall with it. Okay, they came home with less, they'll have less for a couple of months. You know, so, but that's okay. There's different ways to set it up. So, I mean, many different paradigms to allow a child to figure out and to feel the consequences, positive and negative. $500. You were able to find everything on sale. You have $150 left over after the list. Great. Put it in your car account. Right? Or my parents, when we would go to the dentist, my father said, I'm going to give you $300. This is a long time ago. Every time you go to the dentist for cleaning, you have to pay for your own cavities. I'll pay for extra on that. But anything under that, you get. So I'd rather give you the money than the dentist. Clean your teeth and pocket the money. Like, I'm anyway paying. So, right? So there's different ways to do it. Just because now when you send a kid to the dentist, it's always your headache, right? No matter what it is. So there's ways to make it there. Like, yeah, you brush your teeth. Why should I hack your Chinook, right? Make it so that it pays for them to brush their teeth. So there's different ways to figure out how to allow children to feel the benefits or the... or the lack thereof of their behavior. It can be creative as they grow because you want them to start feeling it and then sticking by it. Yeah, experience it. They need to experience the consequences of their behavior, good and bad. Okay.
You started when they were two with you.
Right. So that's why I started with the heat hatshut. That's why that was one of the things I put in, the renewal. That's the first mitzvah we got. Make yourself new. No matter where you are right now, no matter what you've done until now, you have a chance to be a new person walking out the door right now. It could be a tiny little bit of new. I heard such a nice end on this. You might be thinking, oh my gosh, there's so much to do. Yeah, there is so much to do. In our neighborhood, they just tore down St. Anthony's Hospital, the old St. Anthony's. There's big, empty space. It was fascinating watching. And all those cranes looked like dinosaurs just eating the building, crunching and crunching and crunching until the whole thing was gone. And they separated it all into all the recycling, and they sprayed the whole thing. It took months, and it was very interesting. And now there's a big hole, and now they're building something, right? There's going to be a Belmar shopping center type of a thing there. Lovely housing and shops and all kinds of nice stuff there. How did it all get started? With a signature on a piece of paper. While the hospital was still standing, one act, we have a conversation, put our signature here. Now there's going to be years of work before we see what we want to see. That's all. All you need is to start with something, right? And it will grow. So it doesn't mean you have to be a completely different person than you are right now. It means you have to start thinking, okay, I'd like to plant a seed and see it flower over the next few years, right? And I can make myself new. It doesn't matter how I was raised or what I was thinking or what I've read or what my neighbors are doing. Like, there are things that I want to accomplish with my children, and I can start that now in a tiny little way, not a whole big, just a signature on a piece of paper. I want to raise adults. That's it. So I guess we'll end on that for tonight. Pardon? Yeah. We're raising adults. So I say, okay, so if you want any homework for the week, just think about your parenting goals. If you would like to, and I would suggest, sit down with your spouse and have a staff meeting. Think of yourselves as the staff of this institution of child rearing that's under your roof, right? You have a home, and you have staff of your home. You're the staff. So have a staff meeting and actually evaluate each one of your clients. What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? What are your goals, short-term and long-term, for each one? Right, so long-term goals, raising independent adults, but short-term, you see, this one's sneaky, and that one's a little bit lazy, and that one's too smart for his own good. I had one kid who told me, said, I know I need to be taken down a peg. Just, there's nobody who can do it. Yeah.
So I was just going to say, I mean, the fact that we all signed up for this, at least, you know, we're all busy, we could have been at home catching up on all kinds of stuff, but we care enough to
Absolutely. Your effort will be increased if you actually do. Just think about each child, even if it's a few things. But take the time together, whether it's in the car now or set aside some time this week to really look, just look at your clients and see what attention they need. You know, are they getting the attention that they need? Are they getting too much in one area and not enough in another? Do they need a lesson, a tutor, a stricter bedtime, whatever it is? Start to think about what is it that this, what are the holes in the staff-client relationship that's happening here? And how could the staff better care for the clients in that sense, you know, just to have a staff meeting about it? And try to be dispassionate that way. So you don't have to have your parent-child stuff in there. You know, they just drive me nuts on this. No, what this kid has is, you know, this issue, and that for that they probably need this. Then you can see, am I the right one to provide that? Should I hire somebody to provide that? Maybe you're better at that than me. So maybe that's dad's job instead of mom's job, even though that's usually mom's job, right? So whatever it is, just try to figure out, how can you use your resources to take care of these issues? So I'd say assessment. That's this week. Assess strengths and weaknesses as parents, and strengths and weaknesses of your kids. How will you, what kinds of things do you think they might need? Okay, so that's your homework for the week. And then you can think about educate, don't berate. Mm-hmm. When words come out of your mouth, what are you doing? You know, what's the point of this? All right, we did not get to, I have a lovely poem I'm going to hand out.
Poem?
Yeah. This happens to be a poem that, for me, was very helpful. I'll let you read it on your own. It was so helpful in raising my kids because I had really difficult ones. And I was definitely considering which one should I drop. And this is an old poem from an early reader, which really helped me just recenter and keep them all. So should we read it out loud? Everybody's reading it now. Yeah? You want to read it?
Yeah.
You want to read for us?
Like the first
or
paragraph.
Do you want me to read? Yeah, so let's just go around with
sure.
The paragraph. Sure.
Which shall it be? Which shall it be? I looked at John. John looked at me. Dear, patient John, who loves me yet, as well as though my locks were jet. And when I found that I must speak, tell me again what Robert said. And then I, listening, bent my head. This is his letter.
I will give a house and land while you shall live, if in return from out your seven, one child to me for I is given. I looked at John's old garments worn, I thought of all that John had borne, of poverty, of work and care, which I, though willing, could not share. I thought of seven mouths to feed, of seven little children's need, and then of this.
Come, John, said I, will choose among them as they lie asleep. So, walking hand in hand, dear John and I surveyed our band. First to the cradle light we stepped, where Lily and the baby slept, a glory against the pillow white. Softly the father stooped to lay his rough hand down in a loving way, when dream or whisper made her stir, and huskily he said, not her.
We stood beside the trundle bed in one long ray of lamplight shade. Athwart the boyish faces there, in sleep so pitiful and fair, I saw on Jamie's rough red cheek a tear undried. Ere John could speak, he's but a baby too, said I, and kissed him as we hurried by.
Pale Robert Robbie's angel's face, still in his sleep bore suffering's trace. No, for a thousand crowns, not him, he whispered while our eyes were dim.
Poor Dick, bad Dick, our wayward son, turbulent, reckless, idle one. Could he be spared? May he who gave, bade us befriend him to the grave. Only a mother's heart can be patient enough for such as he. And so, said John, I would not dare to send him for her bedside prayer.
Then stole we softly up above, and knelt by Mary, child of love. Perhaps for her he would be better. It would be better, I said to John. Quite silently, he lifted up a curl that lay across her cheek in a willful way, and shook his head, nay, love not thee. And all the while my heart beat audibly.
Only one more, our eldest lad, trusty and truthful, good and glad, so like his father. No, John, no, I cannot, will not let him go.
And so we wrote in courteous way, we could not drive one child away, and afterward toil lighter seemed, thinking of that which we dreamed, happy in truth that not one face we missed from its accustomed place, thankful to work for all the seven, trusting the rest to one in heaven. So I definitely had difficult kids and often thought our life would be so much easier without this one. But this paragraph right here, that only a mother's heart could be patient enough for such as he, and so, said John, I would not dare to send her from her bedside prayer. But yeah, okay, it's my job. I gotta love him, love him, love him, no matter what. So, okay, great.